to order, April 9th meeting, Newcastle County Council, 2013, 7 p.m. Please stand for a moment of silence. Thank you. Please join me in Pledge of Allegiance. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Madam Clerk, please call the roll.
Mr. Bell?
Here.
Mr. Bullock?
Here.
Mr.
Hardin? Here.
Mr. Miller?
Here.
Mr.
Hoff? Here.
Mr. Patrick?
Hello.
Mr. Powers?
Here.
Mr. Retta?
Here.
Good. Maybe he's here.
Here.
Mr. Sweet?
Here.
Mr. Sackett?
Here.
Mr.
Weiner?
No, yes, here.
Mr. President, roll call
of
your
13th
present.
Approve the minutes.
Motion to approve the minutes as distributed.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Minutes are approved. Announcements from members of council. Are there any announcements? Mr. Smiley.
Yes, Mr. President. Appropriate time, I will be making a motion to have read in R13-105 and then making a separate motion to have it tabled. This is a budget resolution. We will be hearing at a future date. Also, since it is out of the norm, I'd like to make an announcement that council will host a budget hearing tomorrow at 3 p.m. on the 8th floor that will involve the executive office, the county auditor, and the four row office.
Thank you, Mr. Smiley. Any other announcements? Mr. Retta?
Thank you, Mr. President. Under the appropriate time, I will be having a presentation. Councilman Street and I will. And you can look behind me. Who we have?
I see the chaps are here.
You got it.
Any other announcements?
Mr. President.
Mr. Bell.
Under the proper order of business, I will also be making a presentation to Brian J. Redke on achieving the rank of Eagle Scout.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. Any other announcements? Seeing none, introduction of ordinances, Madam Clerk.
Ordinance 13022, annual revenue ordinance of Newcastle County for fiscal year 2014, beginning July 9, 2013. Ordinance 13023, calculation of sewer service charges effective July 1, 2013, fiscal year 2014. Ordinance 13024, ordinance authorizing the issuance of general obligation bonds of Newcastle County for the purpose of financing certain capital projects approved in the fiscal year 2014 capital budget. Ordinance 13025, the capital budget ordinance of Newcastle County for the fiscal year beginning July 1, 2013. Ordinance 13026, adopt the annual operating budget of Newcastle County for the fiscal year beginning July 1, 2013. Ordinance 13027, amend the capital budget appropriate $215,000 of state funds to the Claymont Library project.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. We now have committee reports, starting with the Finance Committee. Mr. Smiley and Mr. Cartier.
Yes. I'll go. Yes. First, I would like to touch base about the budget process. April 1st, I chaired the budget meeting having to do with revenues, contingencies, and debt service. Today, April 9th, on the 8th floor, we had the administrative slash finance committee meeting where we approved minutes, read in and tabled, or read by title, the Newcastle County Capital Program for fiscal year 2000 through 2019. That'll be tabled and considered a later date. And then we had an ordinance for Councilman Powers for Granville Streetlights and the Lums Pond Estates 4 subdivision in Pencator 100. We had a robust discussion about council dinner, which we've kind of changed course on that. We discussed the possible contract with Pritchett Associates consultants by the administration to look at Christina School District issue. We entertained grant requests and approved them, had some discussions for expensive revenue roundtable, and then we went to other public comment and adjourned for the evening.
Thank you, Mr. Cartier. Mr. Smiley.
Yes, Mr. President. On April 8th, the Finance Committee met the 8-4 conference room at 3 p.m., and we held a budget hearing for the Department of Land Use FY14.
Thank you. Land Use, Mr. Ratta.
Thank you, Mr. President. On April 2nd, we had the Land Use Committee meeting at 3 o'clock in our workshop chambers, and there was three items, and two of the three items are going to be brought up tonight for discussion and vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ratta. Public Safety, Mr. Bell.
Thank you, Mr. President. This afternoon, we held the Public Safety Committee meeting with all of council in attendance. There was a brief presentation by Councilman Tackett on Ordinance Number 13021, which will be regarding disorderly premises. That particular ordinance received favorable compliments and comments from council, and we applaud Councilman Tackett's initiative to bring this forward. We had an update on police promotions, staffing, the TAPS program initiative, and the current academy status from Major Becker of our county police. And we also had an excellent presentation by Chief Miller on the next generation technologies for our enhanced 911 service.
Thank you, Mr. Bell.
Thanks, sir.
Mr. Powers, Special Services.
Yes, since I forgot it last time. On March 19th at 1:30 on the 8th floor, Special Services met. We got a status of stormwater ponds in Newcastle County and also the status of Newcastle County Park operations. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Powers. The Executive Committee report, we discussed the appointment of Terry Stone to Newcastle County Employees Retirement System Board of Trustees. We had a lengthy discussion around amendment code chapter 26 as relates to human resources, merit system regarding attendance and the minimum increment in which leave hours will be recorded. We also approved the contract, a photographer for the council portrait and the president's portrait. And we overwhelmingly reelected Councilman Primrose Hollins as the president pro tem. And we congratulate him. Let's clap our hands and congratulate you, Mr. Hollins. Please stand. They may not know who you are, sir.
Thank you, Mr. President.
You
are member of council.
Thank you. All right. Moving on to the consent calendar. Any member of the council or the public may remove an item from the consent calendar for further discussion by a simple request. If an item is not removed, it will not be subject to amendment, discussion, or other objection, and will be voted upon as a package. Consent calendar items are noted on the agendas as such and published in the newspaper and available in the back of this room. Is there anyone from council or the public who wishes to have an item removed at this time? Mr. Bell?
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to move that resolution R13-099 be removed from the consent calendar and brought up under the proper order of business.
Is there a second?
Second. Point of information, yes. There's no second needed.
Okay. It'll just be removed. Thank you. Anyone else want to remove any item from the consent calendar? Thank you, Mr. Bell. Is there a motion to approve the consent calendar?
So moved.
All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Madam Clerk, please proceed with the reading of the consent calendar.
Resolution 13096, congratulating Ryan J. Redkay on achieving the rank of Eagle Scout. Resolution 13097, congratulating St. Elizabeth High School girls basketball team on winning the Delaware Eagle Scholastic Athletic Association Girls State Basketball Tournament and Championship. Resolution 13098, reappointing Bruce Costanzo to the Newcastle County Audit Committee. Resolution 13100, consenting to the appointment of Ralph DePriest to the Newcastle County Library Advisory Review Board, Subcommittee of the Department of Community Services Board. Resolution 13101, reappointing Victoria Bandy to the Newcastle County Board of Assessment Review.
Madam Clerk, please call the roll on the consent calendar.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Bullock?
Yes.
Mr.
Yes.
Ms. Miller?
Yes.
Mr. Hollins?
Yes.
Ms. Kilpatrick?
Yes.
Mr. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Retta?
Yes.
Ms. Shelton?
Yes.
Mr. Smiley?
Yes.
Mr. Street?
Yes.
Mr. Tackett?
Yes.
Mr. Weiner?
Yes.
President Delafarge, 13, yes.
Consent calendar has been passed. We will move along with the agenda to presentations. Any council member have any presentations tonight? Mr. Bell.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would like to call forward at this time Councilman Tackett to assist in his presentation. Ryan J. Redclay and his father is with us tonight on achieving the rank of Eagle Scout. So if they could come to the chamber, we'd appreciate it.
Thank you. Congratulations. Give that young man another big hand. Thank you so much. Thank you, Mr. Bell. Mr. Retta, you have a presentation.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to have R13-097 as a presentation tonight for St. Elizabeth's.
Yes.
And Councilman Street will be joining me. Thank you.
Ms. Street?
This resolution congratulates the St. Elizabeth High School girls basketball team on winning the Delaware Interscholastic Athletic Association, DIAA, Girls State Basketball Tournament and Championship. Whereas St. Elizabeth girls basketball team successfully completed their season with a record of 20 wins and 4 losses and was the top seed team to compete for the Delaware Interscholastic Athletic Association State Championship. And whereas the girls basketball team defeated the third seeded Carville girls basketball team 60-46 to be crowned the Delaware Interscholastic Athletic Association girls basketball state champion. And whereas the outstanding leadership of head coach Thomas Ferrier and assistant coaches Dan Cooney, Rex Luce, and Daniel Smolsky proudly led the girls through countless practices to end their season with this ultimate victory. And whereas Coach Ferrier, strongly dedicated and committed to the team and sport of basketball, was named Coach of the Year for Delaware in 2012. And whereas the loud and loyal support of the fans of the BK Nation at the championship game. And whereas the winning tradition has remained alive over the years, with this being the 5th state title for St. Elizabeth girls basketball team and the first crown since 2007. Now therefore be it resolved by and for County Council of Newcastle County that the County Council hereby congratulates St. Elizabeth High School girls basketball team on winning the Delaware Interscholastic Athletic Association girls state basketball tournament and championship. And I know Mr. Greta has some words with it.
Their words, I don't know how to listen to that. One thing, just get back with me, because I spent 9 years there running away from the nuns. I played baseball, football, and basketball there, and the years I played, we won the championship. And we got, I have an aide who played basketball there too. And we were supposed to have a picture of her in her uniform, but they couldn't get it out of the archives. I don't know, something about Da Vinci couldn't do it. But we have a presentation here for the coaches. And
that's my bad.
This year is for the team. I guess Tom's going to hang it in his bedroom or something. But the school is in James District, and it goes back to my grade school alma mater, plus 1 year high school, and Tom's in my district. So that's why we're both up here, and you know, it's a good thing for me to see this, and congratulations.
Can't see Councilman Retta.
He wants to say something. Yes.
Stand up, Joe.
I am.
No, you're fine.
No. They all just look different ways.
Too bad. Oh, which flash? Photoshop.
One more.
They're done for the year.
Middle Run Crossing, King's Cross, Limestone Acres, Westmoreland, Stonebridge, Spring Meadow, Northern View, Damon's Road, Deerfield, Heritage Farms, Brandywine Hunt, and the City of Wellington. These neighborhoods are part of Newark, Fair, Newcastle, Claymont, Hoquetson, and Wellington. This is truly a nice cross-section of our wonderful county. At this time, Gretchen Luce will introduce the rest of our staff, the individual members of the state championship team, and the administrators that are here with us tonight.
I first would like to, obviously, Tom Ferrier, head coach, assistant coach Dan Cooney, other assistant coach Danielle Smolsky. Now I'll start with our youngest to our oldest. She might be the youngest, but she's obviously one of the tallest, our eighth grader, Kayla Goodyear. This is funny to see her this way because I'm surprised she's not. We have freshman Alexis McCarron. Freshman on our, just off of surgery, Gabby Julian. Let's see who else. Freshman, Jacqueline Garianis. That's it for the freshmen, correct? All right, sophomores, ooh, big ones. All right, Lisa Tiberi. Who else do we have? Oh, I'm number 10, Alex Thomas. Jordan Humes. Who else? Is that it? Oh, I forgot freshman Raven Tompkins, not able to be here tonight. Sophomore junior? All right, now on to our juniors. Cecilia Mazaluski, we call her Cece. Who's my other juniors? Sabrina Hackendorn, Macy Robinson. And last but certainly not least, number one in our team's hearts, for sure, our lone senior, Jocelyn Rodriguez. Also, Principal Shirley Downs and Assistant Principal John Forrester.
Let's give this championship team another big hand. Thank you. Great job. You make us proud. Thank you, Coach. Consideration of resolutions removed from the consent calendar and other resolutions, R13-102. Mr. Retta.
Thank you. I'd like to have resolution
Excuse
R13.
Me, point of order.
Yes.
R13-099 was removed from the consent calendar.
Yes.
That should be next on the agenda.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Smiley. Resolution number 13-099. Ms. Kilpatrick.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that resolution 13-099 be read by title only and placed before council for its consideration.
Second.
Resolution 13-099, appointing Terry Stone to the Newcastle County Employees Retirement System Board of Trustees.
Mr. Councilmember
Kilpatrick.
Thank you. This is a man that about 11 months ago, it told me that he would be interested in being on a community board. He is 2 years into retirement and feels that he would like to give back to the community. At approximately that same time, Kristen Dwyer from the then administration contacted me and said that they were looking for people for several boards and did I have anyone that I would like to nominate. And obviously I did. At that point, we talked about a couple of different boards. We talked about human resources, we talked about ethics, and we talked about the pension board. We looked at his resume, and At that point, we were coming into an election, and that administration pretty much put a hold on any new appointments until following the election. So once the election was over, I brought it back up to our policy director, and he spoke to people within the administration. I believe that we were told that HR now was filled. Ethics did not have any openings that he fit into, and the pension board ultimately had some resignations, and he was asked if he would like to be on the pension board. He agreed that he would, although he would have taken any one of the boards, so I brought his name forth for nomination. We nominated him under the current law, which says that county council has 4 members that they get to appoint. None of them could be an official or an employee of the county. 2 of them had to be members appointed by the Board of Trustees, appointed to the Board of Trustees, had to be in banking or investment. A 3rd one had to be a third member appointed to the board. He had to be a retired member of the program. That leaves a 4th person open, which would be a public member. Just as all state boards require, there has to be a public member, non-professional, as a balance. I learned today, very late in the day, prior to us going into the executive committee meeting, when we had him scheduled for an appointment, that this executive administration was against this appointment. There were all sorts of rumors going through the hall that I had nominated him as a friend of an enemy of the administration, not to mention any names. I had never been called by anybody from the executive office to tell me that they had any concerns, which is extremely disappointing that there was such a lack of communication. They do not believe that he has the criteria, the credentials, to be on this board, although he has worked in the pension, with pension, setting up pension boards, as we heard today when he was interviewed. He is not a finance person, but he is a well-balanced, well-respected person within the community. So this today was pulled off of the consent calendar because there were concerns. Since that time, I have been contacted by the administration and told that they would put him on another board. They would put him on an HR board, which he's very well qualified for. My response to them was, if he's so well qualified, let's put him on the pension board. And if there is an opening, which I was told a few months ago that there was not, if there's an opening, they can then go to him and they can say, we have an opening on HR. We believe you are very well qualified. We would like you to be our nominee, and it can come back before us. So at this point, I would like to hold with my nomination for this gentleman to become a public member of the pension board.
Thank you, Councilmember Kilpatrick. Mr. Bell?
Thank you, Mr. President. As we all know on council, we had an extensive discussion in committee this afternoon, and I don't think anyone will disagree with the fact that when we have folks that come forward and offer to volunteer for one of our boards, it is very much appreciated by this government. Terry W. Stone is exactly that. He's willing to give us time and energy and volunteer for one of our advisory boards. Has an extensive background in human resources, as we saw within his resume. What occurred at the meeting this afternoon was that there was some very compelling information that was provided by our Chief Administrative Officer, Dave Grimaldi, our Chief Human Resources Officer, Lynn Beatty, and our Chief Financial Officer, Mike Coop, concerning the appointments and some of the problems that they feel exist today on the pension board. So with that being said, there was a lot of discussion, and I think that for the benefit of this evening and reviewing this, that I'd like to ask that those particular comments or concerns as to the future and of this particular pension board and what some of their concerns are and what they've found so far be presented here this evening. And then we can continue our discussion as far as if any of council has any questions. Now, once the applicant, actually the nominee, had left the room, you know, we went on and made further discussion, and I did mention that I felt that this particular board, the Human Resources Board, would probably be a much better fit for Mr. Stone with his extensive background in HR. Before anyone from the administration comes forward, what I'd like to say is this. I personally contacted the administration after committee because I felt, as many felt, that the manner in which this was presented and at the late hour that it was presented, that it was very embarrassing, to say the least, for the district council person, Councilwoman Kilpatrick, that made this nomination for the pension board, and had sought to get Terry Stone on the HR advisory board for several months now. And so I think it was embarrassing to Councilwoman Kilpatrick, it was embarrassing to all council, and especially to the applicant, to have to listen to what was being presented. But what I have learned is that the information concerning the nominee was not learned weeks ago or anything, that they became aware of this over this past few days, and it necessitated the Chief Administrative Officer coming before council and presenting what his concerns were. So I understand the embarrassment. I understand that it's not the norm for the way folks come before council and what's presented before council, but I also understand that we had the Chief Administrative Officer, the Chief of HR, and also the Chief Financial Officer make a presentation before us as to what their concerns are in future appointments to the pension board. So if it pleases the Chair and Councilwoman Kilpatrick, I'd like to ask that the Chief Administrative Officer and if the Chief HR Officer would like to come forward to just kind of reiterate briefly what their concerns are, what they see as some of the problems today and in the future with some of the changes in pension plans, and why they came before council this afternoon and made their presentation. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. Mr. Grimaldi? Yes. Please state your name and your title.
CEO David Grimaldi. The administration objects to this candidate, and it is not for political reasons or for pride. This pension fund is in a state of what I think financial emergency. We have about $400 million worth of assets and $700 million in liabilities. That's $300 million in future unfunded liabilities. This candidate seems very well qualified for a position in an HR board. We would certainly nominate him to the HRAB, but not for this board. This is too critical a time to be putting an amateur, a financial amateur, to manage $400 million of this county's assets. It's irresponsible, and I think you as council people have a responsibility to these employees who rely on this pension's performance to put people on this board that understand finance. That is our objection. It is not political. I think that, and I applaud you for bringing him forward. We would be more than happy to put him on the HR board, which that is his background. And I want it to be clear that this candidate, who would essentially be managing $400 million of the county's assets, has neither a financial degree nor a financial background in any of his professional life. And he's currently a retiree. I think you're making a big mistake if you do put this forward, and I would ask for the county employees that rely on this money to have a little bit higher duty of care than to nominate an amateur, a financial amateur, to this board. Thank you.
Don't leave, please.
Ms. Kilpatrick and Mr. Smott.
Mr. Grimaldi, would you please tell everyone who is on this board? How is this board made up?
It's comprised mostly of county employees, mostly of union reps. There are a few that the council gets to choose. Unfortunately, I disagree with the composition of the board entirely myself. There are political appointees that are on the board, Chief Human Resources, CFO. I don't think that board should be politicized. I don't think that that board should be comprised of any political appointees. And I think that there should be more financial expertise on that board.
Mr. Smiley.
Do any of those appointees that you just mentioned have the experience that you're asking of this individual?
No, they don't, but that makes it all the more important,
that's my,
sir.
That's my question. Has the county executive asked any of those, which are executive appointments, if they would be willing to step down so that he could search for more quality?
We don't have that kind of discretion because those appointments are within a confine. We're allowed to nominate based on certain unions or certain locals, but it's not pure discretion.
I understand, but you do have the ability to ask and search and ask those unions whether they have anyone in there that may have more qualifications. I'm just asking whether that was researched yet or not.
No, they're county employees. We don't have a finance division in the county.
I worked with a guy that had a master's in business, and he was my helper on a truck. So it doesn't mean there aren't county employees that have experience. I'm just asking if that was researched.
But it's a very specific discipline. Investment management is a very specific discipline. I don't know that there'd be many places in the county that we would find that discipline.
Well, discipline is very lacking, I'll say that much. I'm done.
Whatever that
Mr. Weiner.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. Grimaldi, I got an email, as all council members did, late Friday afternoon, saying that Mr. Stone's resume is attached. It's being considered for a board position. I didn't know what board position it was, nor did any other council member. I emailed it to you, didn't I, sir, late Friday?
Yes.
And you emailed me back saying this person doesn't have any financial background.
Yes.
And we were unaware whether or not that person was supposed to be the generalist or whether there was a generalist even required, because that wasn't in the information provided to council, was it?
No.
We didn't figure that out until a few hours ago this afternoon.
Yes.
You heard me say that 10 years ago, Tom Croft, that helped run the DuPont Pension Company, resigned from this pension because he was concerned that at the time, CFO Ron Morris was urging more union non-specific experts to be added to the board, not more subject matter experts.
You did tell me that.
Yes. And today you heard me reiterate those remarks.
Yes.
You heard me also say that I join you in your concern that this pension was funded at 120%, and now it's funded at 74%, and by the new definition, it'll be funded by 54%.
Yes.
And by the new standards, it should be funded by 90%.
In a perfect world, at least.
Yes. Yeah. And you also heard me say that the union folks, which are supposed to be fiduciaries, are not well served by having the majority positions on this pension fiduciary board.
I would agree.
And so I'm going to reiterate what I had said before, and I think we owe it to our union members, our non-union members, our public, our retirees, to revisit that scheme. And I pledge to work with my fellow council persons to do something that I've wanted to do for over 10 years, and that's to reconstitute this board to have more subject matter experts on it. Will you work with me, sir?
I would applaud you. Yes, yes.
Thank you. I just want to say, and I think you agree, and I agree with all the remarks made, because we just found out about this a few days ago and didn't have more information, that Terry Stone is eminently qualified and a wonderful citizen, with so few subject matter experts on this pension board out of 15, only two subject matter experts. We're not required like state law does. County law doesn't require that the citizen be a generalist. We simply have the option of taking the generalist and making it yet a third subject matter expert. Would you agree?
Sure, but you are required, I think, to maximize the value of the taxpayers' assets to ultimately fund this.
Yes.
And to look out for the benefit of the employees who ultimately rely on its performance.
Well, for that reason, I'm going to be voting no, despite the fact that I feel very respectful of Terry Stone and look forward to taking advantage of his gracious offer to serve some public board.
As do I. I think he's well qualified for HR.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Weiner. Ms. Kilpatrick.
Thank you, Mr. President. I find it very strange that nobody knew what board that he was going on when I was on vacation last week, and in the middle of my vacation got an email from, I believe it was the FOP president, asking for Terry Stone's resume because now they wanted to take a greater, play a greater role in the pension board.
Thank you for that comment. Any other questions to Mr. Grimaldi? I see, I'm sorry, Mr. Tackett.
Oh, somebody else?
Mr. Tackett, you have a question?
Thank you, PB.
Yes.
David, could you tell us what you were doing today at 6:50 this afternoon?
At 6:50? I don't know if I remember exactly at that time.
Well, I'll have to refresh your memory. Sure. We were meeting in my office.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tackett. I see our chief HR officer, Ms. Beatty. Did you want to comment on this issue? Thank you, Mr. Grimaldi.
What was that? I want to know. It was at 6:30.
Please state your name and title for the record.
It's a witness. Hi, I'm Valencia Beatty. I'm the Chief Human Resources Officer for Newcastle County. I provided some comments earlier today in committee meeting, but I also wanted to try to clarify maybe where you have some misinformation. The reason why I suspect this council was not aware that there was a vacancy on the Human Resources Advisory Board was because the individual is still serving in that role. Ms. Anderson has indicated actually about a year and a half ago that she wished to step down from her role on the Human Resources Advisory Board for personal reasons. That information was actually communicated a couple of times to Christian Dwyer, and we thought that she was acting upon that. The administration did change, and my staff put out a feeler to Ms. Anderson to see if she wanted to continue to stay on the Human Resources Advisory Board, and she indicated that she did not. However, recognizing that as a three-person board, she said she would stay on board until council or the county executive selected somebody else to serve in that capacity. So it probably appears that the board is fully staffed with three board members, but in actuality there is a vacancy. The first that I heard actually of the nominee that has come before council tonight, and it is a council pick, was when I took a look at the agenda and saw that there was a name being submitted. Of course, we don't weigh in on it because it is a council pick. But I did have an email from the chair of the pension board who also was asking me about the nominee because he wasn't aware. Again, it is a council pick, so he does not have to be aware. I will once again share that I can't stress enough the importance of who we put on this board because the members of the pension board, the trustees, they are not experts. To answer, I think, a concern, I think, Councilman Smiley, you may have raised this concern about the makeup of the submissions from the unions. I don't profess to be on the inside circle with them, but I do know the process because we've replaced three, maybe four, of the union representatives since I've been on board. One due to just workload, and he chose to come off. One due to retirement. One due to personal reasons, and then I think I can't remember the other one. Be that as it may, the unions will submit three names to the county executive, and it's not easy for the locals to get those names because it is a specialized area. So oftentimes they are struggling to get three qualified names to come forward to serve on the pension board. Again, I don't want to speak for them. This is just my observation in dealing with them when the names come to me, and then I in turn pass them on to the county executive. So I just ask that you remember my comments today. I recognize that maybe this wasn't the best way this was handled, and I don't profess to know all the innards of how the name came forward, and I'm not trying to cast any aspersions whatsoever on this nominee. But I'm just more so concerned about the makeup of the pension trust at the board members at this point in time. It is a are very important, and we're very vulnerable right now, to tell you the truth, and we need some expertise. I personally am a little biased because I also know we need someone on the Human Resources Advisory Board, and just in listening to what transpired this afternoon, I do believe Mr. Stone would be an excellent addition to that board. But I thank you for allowing me to speak again, and I don't envy the position that you're in, and I know you'll do the right thing, that is. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Beatty. I see our Chief Financial Officer, Maxine McCombe, to the podium as Mr. Cartier raises a question, and Mrs. Kilpatrick, or comment.
I just would like to make a comment.
Yes.
If what the COO claims about the condition of our pension is of such a magnitude, I believe there's going to be a lot of work and change that we're going to have to do as county council and the administration to correct the deficits that are in the management of the pension fund. I don't believe that making a big issue about this person is the right thing to do. He came forward in good faith. He seems to be a very qualified person. He fits the generalist, you know, criteria for putting a member on the pension board. I don't think that the appointment of Mr. Stone is going to, in one way or another, you know, hurt this pension. We've got other work that we need to do. And I also feel like, you know, it's hard enough to get people to volunteer for anything in New Castle County. What are we doing to the credibility of our process if we have a gentleman with such, you know, qualifications come forward in good faith? He was told there wasn't a vacancy on one board. Now there is an opening. He comes forward in good faith to serve on the pension board. So I think for the credibility of this body, and doing all the due diligence we have done, the reform of the pension management is a huge issue. It will require much more than one position appointment. So I just feel that we shouldn't turn this into a political football. We should keep our eye on the big picture and the big issues that we'll have to confront. And, you know, I just feel, you know, we don't want to treat citizens like this. We want them to come forward and negotiate in good faith for a position we feel that they're qualified for, and I think he meets the qualifications for, you know, the pension board at this time.
Councilmember Kilpatrick and Councilmember Tackett, and then we'll hear from our CFO.
Thank you. First, I want to make it clear that the Human Resources Board is an executive nomination, not a council nomination. So this would not come from any one of us. In the previous administration, because the county executive asked if there was anybody that I wanted to nominate, I could turn that name over to him, and he would have made it as an executive nomination. We've heard a lot today about the makeup of this pension board and what it should or should not be. The bottom line is we have a law that says what it is, and right now, today, we are bound by that law. We're not bound by something that maybe should be changed. Over the past couple of months, we've read a lot in the News Journal about the pension board. We have never once been called or visited by anyone in the executive branch to talk about revising the pension board or the issues that are happening within the pension board, if they are happening. I mean, how would we know? Because no one ever communicates with us on that level. These boards, as I mentioned, this would be a public member. These boards are to be diversified. There's people on there that are supposed to have experience in multiple disciplines. That's what I brought forward. I'm staying with this nomination. If it's voted up, if it's voted down, that's up to the will of council.
Thank you. Mr. Tackett.
Thank you, PB. Just a couple quick comments.
Mr. Tackett, before you go on, tell folks what PB means.
Can't remember your name.
President Bullock.
They're looking strange.
Oh, President Bullock.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Carry on. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to offer a few comments. I obviously have been all over the place also on this appointment.
this is highly unusual, you know, what's happening right now, as we're in the 11th hour here. You know, obvious, forthcoming, I think, the CHRO's comments coming forward this evening made a lot of valid points. Councilwoman Kilpatrick also has made a lot of valid points. But at the end of the day, this board is going to have to be accountable for their actions. This is going to ultimately going to have to be a come together for this body and the administration if this issue is this dire and we're going to have to fix it. And I can guarantee the administration there's probably not a will on this council to fix that on the backs of the taxpayers. So if we're going to have to do it, we're going to have to do here, and we're probably going to have to agree to disagree on a few things, but ultimately at the end of the day, we're going to have to work together on this if it's going to get fixed.
Thank you, Mr. Tackett. Mr. Coop, you have a comment, sir?
Yes, sir. Thank you. Mike Coop, Chief Financial Officer. I'd just like to say a few things. This is obviously new to me. I'm not here to criticize the nominee. I'm here to let you all know we are in challenging times, and challenging times require good subject matter experts. I've been on the pension board for about 4 months now. I do have a finance background, but it's in accounting, budgeting. It's not in financial analysis. This is what the board really needs. This is what we look up for. This is what, in challenging times, we all go to our financial advisors to help us in our personal accounts at home. Most people in accounting that have their own financial advisors to help them. This is what the pension board needs. Currently, the chairman of the board is the only person from the outside that has the financial background. If he's not there, there's no one there. Even if there's two people, if there's three, if two are absent, we're down to one. There's definitely a need that we focus on appointing someone with a good financial background to help the pension in a challenging time. We have to remember, years ago when the pension was first created, it was very small. I think some of the policies and rules that we have that affect the pension refer back to when it was very small. Now we have a $400 million pension, and it's still being governed by these little rules from the archaic days. And it's very important that council does focus at some point here, that we get good financial analysts on the board. The only comment I can make here, I'm sorry, I don't have the financial background. Like I said, I do accounting and budgeting. I do a little bit with 401s, but not a $400 million pension. And it really does require it. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Coop. Councilmember Kilpatrick.
Thank you. So I'm to understand that nobody from Newcastle County, whether it's the union representatives or those general managers that are to be on this board, have the right financial criteria, but the one person that we have asked to put on as the public member has to?
Thank you. Mr. Street, and then Mr. Smiley, and then we hear from FOP President Mike Zielinski. Mr. Street.
Mr. President, may I ask a couple questions of the senior council people who are here? And, well, it's one question. To your recollection, when's the last time the administration came forward at the 11th hour and purposely and intentionally sabotaged a council nominee for any board or position?
Mr. Bell?
Yes, Mr. President. And I understand. And as I stated earlier, I think that this was not only embarrassing, but it was unprecedented. But when was the last time that we had the chief financial officer, who I consider very talented in financial management, the chief administrative officer, when was the last time that the chief administrative officer, and it's a new government that has went in, that did not have a transition, but the chief administrative officer of this county government has come to us, the chief human resources officer, the chief financial officer, but especially the chief administrative officer, has brought forward to us something that he feels could be detrimental to the future of this county with the pension board. And so I understand volunteerism. I've volunteered my whole life. And if I could apologize for the administration to Councilwoman Kilpatrick and his council, I would do it. But it's not my place. But it's a very unusual circumstance. But at the same time, the criticality of what's been presented to us, especially to our chief administrative officer, brings my mind forward on this.
Mr. President, point of order. I had asked a question, and I was particularly talking about, and I wanted to follow up with some responses. So when you come back to me.
Okay. And I apologize. I was wrecking.
And I really wanted to get a response from senior council people without calling their names. Did you want to respond, Mr. Hollins?
Was he talking about me?
He wants him to respond.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Yes, sir.
I did understand that Councilman Street was referring to me or Councilman Weiner. I think I've made my comments very clear in the workshop this afternoon, and I didn't want to be repetitive because in talking with some council members since that meeting, I think that a lot of council members were very disappointed about what took place in the workshop this afternoon, and I didn't want to carry this conversation to make it even more difficult for council members. The fact of the matter is, all the things that have been said by the administration, including the chief financial officer, the CHRO, the chief administrative officer, all these things make a lot of sense. The problem I have, they're doing this on the backs of one citizen in Newcastle County, and I would agree with Councilman Cartier. If all these changes needed to take place, we would have heard something before now. We've been having some discussion about it. I read in the newspaper, like other members of council, all the issues and so forth about one investment firm over another and all these kinds of things. Not one time has it been on the agenda for the Finance Committee meeting to have this discussion. This afternoon, an executive committee meeting with someone coming forward to serve voluntarily, all of a sudden, the floodgates open, and there's all these issues. These issues should be addressed in finance. If our budget related to the pension fund is in such doom and gloom, I don't think we've heard about it just now at the 11th hour, when in fact we have some citizen who came in here under the pretense that they would get a fair hearing, and that has not happened. I would not participate in it. As I said earlier, I'm going to support Councilwoman Kilpatrick for doing what she's doing. She did what was supposed to do. She followed the letter of the rules and the law, and it says that it's a generalist. So why all of a sudden now all of this responsibility of the $400 million budget, the $400 million pension is on the backs of one generalist. It just doesn't make any sense to me. What we need to be doing going forward is to revamp the whole makeup of the board if that's what's needed. But we don't need to do it on the backs of one citizen who came forward, and I smell a rat in all of this, and I'm not going to support it.
Mr. President, is the answer to my question then? It hasn't happened before?
It may have happened, Councilman Street, but it's up to this body to make that decision if they want to go forward based upon what they're hearing. And what I'm hearing so far has not impressed me. It has not convinced me. And I'm not going to buy into that. I do buy into the fact that we need to take a closer look at the makeup of the board, and I like to see how we're going to get through all these unions to make that happen. So what I'm hearing here tonight, to me, it doesn't quite make a lot of sense.
Mr. President, with all due respect,
Mr. Street,
I said earlier, you know, all the financial gurus and all the financial wizards on Wall Street are the ones that got us as a nation into this mess. Now, this is politics at its finest in Newcastle County. And what this is a power play. And at the end of it, we'll know in a few minutes where the real power is. Because the fact of the matter is, I think it is a slap in the face of this council. For a council person to make an appointee, and at the 11th hour, that appointee get purposely and intentionally sabotaged by the entire administration, okay? Come forward with all the king's horses, all the king's men and women. Where the king? Where's the king who's driving this? And it's a lot more than this than meets the eye, and the will of council be the will of council, okay? But if it was a genuine, legitimate concern about the pension board and the qualifications of people, then the first thing the administration would do is say, we need to get rid of the entire board, the folks who are not qualified now, and start all over again. If you're going to do it, for one, you need to be consistent across the board. Otherwise, it's not in good faith. It's it's a slap in the face to this council. It's political as you know what. And I guess we'll know in a few minutes where the political power is.
Thank you, Mr. Street. Mr. Smiley, and then we'll call for the vote.
I apologize. I don't have a question, Mr. Coop. I apologize, Mr. Street, right, because sorry. I think it's going to take more than a few minutes. No, I don't have a question. I have some comments to make. First, I want to clear the air. The latest untruth being circulated about me is that this appointment came to Councilwoman Kilpatrick via myself from someone on the outside. Well, again, that's another untruth that's been circulated about me lately. I had nothing to do with it, never met the gentleman till today, and didn't know about it until I opened the agenda while I was out of town as well. Second, I want to say, despite the members, some members of the pension board not having the experience that some people would like, I've attended a lot of the pension board meetings over the last 8 years. And I will tell you that those members on that board have grilled the actuary and the investment personnel that they've hired to know, and there are some very good questions come out. You know, sometimes people need to leave the college degree on the shelf and bring street level logic when they ask the questions. And a lot of times that's where you find the truth. And I will tell you, these board members, despite whatever education they don't have or do have, are very diligent, very sincere, and very dedicated to the county employees. And I believe this appointee will be the same. Unfortunately, I missed two meetings that apparently I wasn't there. So based on comments that I've heard that have come back to me, unfortunately, we lost three dedicated members of this board because they felt disrespected. Whether they were or not, that's a matter of their feeling. So now we need to replace. I can tell you the retiree, there wasn't a more dedicated member of this board. Every time a subcommittee was needed, his hand was up, and he dug into the facts and did a heck of a job. And the board members will acknowledge that. That part aside, having attended all these meetings, I want to address the dire circumstances of this pension fund. And no, I do not have the fiscal background. The closest I came to college was quite a few very enjoyable nights in the dorms at the University of Delaware. All right? And I'm not apologizing for them either. I'm just too old now. But listening to the actuaries speak, the investment advisors, has this pension fund taken a hit? Yes, it has, according to them and according to what the reports we've had. But so has every pension fund out there. I belong to another pension fund that has drastically changed the age and years of service requirements in order to receive a pension. So they've all taken a hit. But according to the actuaries and the investment advisors, relative to other government funds, ours has taken less of a hit because of the fiscal responsibility and actions taken by this board. So I think they're doing their due diligence. I think this individual will be a part of it. Unfortunately, the investment people out there and the rating agencies and all, they're looking at changing what's considered a reasonable percentage of investment return. That is going to have an adverse effect on the ratings of our pension fund. But it's going to have the same effect on all pension funds. So to hold the county pension fund up as if it's the devastated pension fund and all the other pension funds in the world are doing great is not fair. It is really not fair. And one thing about this gentleman that we're looking at tonight, based on his resume, I feel very comfortable. If I don't feel comfortable about anything else, I feel comfortable that he's my type of person because he's not going to feel disrespected or intimidated. And he's going to make the right decisions, and he's going to stand up and stay on this board and fight for what's good for the county employees. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Please come to the podium, state your name and title.
My name is Mike Selinsky. I'm the president of the FOP Lodge 5, and My comments are pretty much going to be addressed towards the pension plan itself and not the individual. I agree with you, Councilman Kilpatrick. I did send an email to you requesting the gentleman's resume based upon information that had been given to us in previous weeks. At the end of the day, I'm a police officer. I represent approximately 600 active and retired police officers. Some of us have a vested interest in this pension, and some of us don't, because after 1993, all uniformed police officers went to the state or the county municipal program under the state. However, I do represent the retirees. So my comments aren't towards the individual itself. It's the pension plan itself. And if, in fact, the information we're receiving is true, and I don't have any reason to doubt that it's not, then we're in trouble. The employees here are in trouble. And time after time, I believe it's the employees that get the short end of the stick. And I think everyone here, all the council members, have made some very, very good comments about the pension program itself. And I think there has to be some drastic changes made as to the composition of the board, how they vote on things, how things are brought forward, who does the actuary studies, what investment firms they use, all that stuff. Are all the important things to us. Because at the end of the day, each union representative has a representative on the board. But it's basically you're asking a framing carpenter to go in there and build you a home. They're given limited financial background experience. At the end of the day, they're police officers, paramedics, sanitation workers, sewer workers, special services, and so forth. They don't have the expertise to be weighing in on some of these decisions on a multi-million-dollar investment that's going to affect employees for the future. Myself, not myself, because I'm in the other pension program, but the other employees that I represent. So, you know, my comments about the pension program are the pension program, the way it's run, the way it's structured, and so forth, not the individual himself. And I will take some of the responsibility for not following up with Councilman Kilpatrick or Councilwoman Kilpatrick about the reason why we asked for his resume from the union standpoint. I believe some of you may have received an email later this afternoon after our executive meeting from Ask Me Local 3109 President Richard Kret. I assume that that email was going to come out on behalf of all of us and where we stood with that, not just one individual. So my comments are not directly towards the appointee, and I applaud his willingness to come forward as a volunteer in this day and age to find anybody that's willing to donate their time and volunteer. My hat goes off to them. My comments are more directed toward the pension program and how we're going to fix it. I think an independent actuary study needs to be done, and that's what I would request from the county council.
Councilmember Kilpatrick.
Thank you for your comments. And I doubt that there's anybody here that disagrees with you that we need to now look at the pension system. And we've been briefed intermittently over the years that I've been there, and certainly much longer over the years that everyone else has been here. I have a problem with the communication that if it was this bad, why didn't somebody come and say something at the end of each finance committee? We have basically a round table discussion where anybody, council, public, anyone, can bring something up. I find it very strange that we're having this discussion today, and over all of these months, no one has brought this to us as a suggestion for discussion or to look into or allegations or anything else. We only know what we read in the news journal. I'm going to presume it was somewhere Wednesday or Thursday when you asked me for the resume, which was fine. I know that, you know, Nelly gave it to you. I have no problems doing that. I have no problems that the unions want to play a larger role in this. That is not the issue here at all. Just for clarification, did you know that this was the man for the pension board?
I knew that based upon my own research or homework that I do to prepare myself for the meetings. I mean, I'm not going to, in no way, shape, or form, would I throw any other union under the bus, but I think it's clearly evident that I participate in all the meetings. I'm clearly there. I show up, and if I'm not there, I have a representative from our union there, either my vice president or somebody else on my executive board. So just as I go into any meeting, whether it's the finance committee meeting, the public safety committee, I read the agenda. I pull the resolutions up. I look at them. I do some research. So based upon some of the information that we had just recently trying to wrap our hands around what's going on with this pension program, what's right, wrong, or indifferent, you know, where do you go? You know, some representatives on the pension plan say this, some say that, and then you're getting different information. So as a whole, I'm trying to put all that together to make a decision where we're going to stand as a union. And doing that, I prepared for what I saw his name as an appointee, knowing that there was potentially some problems related to us that we're still trying to figure out. Are they here or are they there? We don't know. That's basically what I asked for his resume for, thinking that if there was problems with this pension program, my philosophy or our philosophy from our union would be to go heavily with somebody with a financial background, not so much an HR background. I have nothing, his resume on the HR side is impeccable. I mean, if I was an HR person, I would be dying to get him on my board. I just think financially speaking, based upon what I've heard, and having no independent actuary to back that up, is what I would request to find out what kind of shape we really are in, then I have to go with the sound advice that I'm being given, that there is a potential problem with the program.
And who's giving you this advice? I mean, is this just coming from the administration, what you've heard today, or?
No, it's based upon some of the past. Our past representative, Bill Harden, was excellent. He retired. And if I can find a way to get him back on the board, I'm going to do it. Outside of being a police officer, the guy has a very good understanding and background of financial capabilities and how to do it. And I agree with what a lot of the council people say, that at the end of the day, the college degree doesn't always speak for what the person has to offer. I agree with that in some points. Our representative now is just coming into it and trying to wrap his head around it, and has gotten the basic, crash course 1 week. This is what a pension board does, more or less a four-year education rammed into a week off the cuff or off the record training. So I'm relying on the information that I'm getting from the administration and the information that I'm getting from my pension board representative. And my pension board representative is telling me that, yes, if public employee unions are going to have to switch over to the rules and regulations that the private sector is normally under now, then yes, our funding is going to go drastically down. And then yes, that will put our pension program drastically underfunded. But at the end of the day, he doesn't have a good knowledge of it, because at the end of the day, he's a police officer, not a financial background. And he only has the limited training that's offered to him.
Well, I applaud you for figuring out that it was somebody from the pension board, and obviously nobody else was able to do that. Thank you.
Mr. Retta.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Mike.
You're okay, Mike. My background, where I worked and all, we had a pension board, and they're all consist of union members. And they didn't have any financial background, so to speak. Some of them were pretty knowledgeable on things. And our pension went up. But at the same time, when back in 08, when everybody took a hit, ours took a hit too. And to be solvent, according to the last communications we got from the federal government, you had to be about 78% to be in hold what our members would be able to draw on. We went down to 57%. We're back up again. Now, I know a lot of pensions are going to be doing that, because they go up and down according to the way your stocks are and different bonds that they work with. Now, not everybody has a financial background. I believe Mr. Stone has a degree in finances. It's somewhere along the line, if I can remember right. But at the same time, it was said tonight and this afternoon that we have a couple people on the pension board that don't have any investment background or financial background, but yet they're coming out of the county and they sit on the board. And I can understand what the chief CAO said about putting qualified people with a financial background and knowing investments to put them in there, which is great. But at the same time, if you're going to take a public servant who came forth to to get on the board, we're going to send a bad message to the public of other people that want to get on different boards, saying that, you know, why come forward if we're not going to do anything about it? And the thing is, you know, we have people, like I said, people on there that don't have a financial background. What are we going to do with them? Are we going to take them off and replace them? Or are we just going to let them stay? Like I said, my local, and I believe Georgia's local too, some of the people there have financial, but some of them don't. Most of them don't. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Retta. Mr. Sheldon and Mr. Weiner.
Yes, Mr. President, I don't know who can answer this. We get briefed once a year. People keep talking we need an independent auditor. We have an auditor in the pension fund. He comes to us once a year. He came, I think, in October. He said we were in the 79% zone, which is a yellow zone. There's green, yellow, orange, and red. Red is the one that's in the 50%, and it goes up in colors, is what the federal government says. So we're just under the green, which is 80%. Now, we were just told this exactly in October, if I remember correctly. We're close to the 80%. We're actually above the state of Delaware's funding. Now we're asking to hire an independent auditor, which really gets me confused, because you already have an independent auditor. You hired this auditor who comes in and then audits you and is held accountable by the federal government to say that this is done. So this really confuses me when you got people coming up here asking, we need an independent auditor, and they're on the board. You have an auditor. I mean, it boggles my mind that they're saying, well, how in the hell did we get to the 80% or 79.5% rating? Or we're going to go to the 54, unless you're just pulling something out of the air. An auditor has to give you that and has to signify and certify this. So this really hurts from the union side, me looking at it. They're saying they want an independent auditor when he hired an auditor. And maybe his term's not up, but in a 60-day notice, you can fire any official or public identity company if you feel as though they're not doing their job, whether it's the lawyers that's on there, whether it's the money managers, or anybody that's overseeing the money managers. So this goes a lot deeper than one person. This is exactly right. But it confuses me even more when people say, well, we need to hire, you don't need to hire nobody, you need to fire somebody. And hire somebody better, maybe. But to say that you need an independent whatever is not true. And this concerns me on the labor side, and I've had over 27 years over the labor book. It's in my pocket. And I'm going to tell you, there's always, wherever we went, and I always ask this, and now we're not under ERISA, but even to my union brothers there, I'm going to tell you, you always had equal. And there was always a fight. But you never had more union than you did management, because who's going to vote themselves not a raise? And who's going to take a cut? If we're at 54%, you're looking at close to probably, you're looking at the federal government bailouts if you're in a trade union. You're looking here to raise in taxes next year. So, I mean, this is a lot. I've been quiet the whole time as researching this. As being a trustee for over 20-some years, and hearing that we're in so financial disagreement when we get briefed every single year on this. From 2004 on, we've always been briefed. And, yes, it was up higher, but actually they got raises back in 2000. And then, of course, the market crashed, and everybody, you know, crashed and burned. As Mr. Red is completely right, and nobody's dug it out. But what the building trades had to do, at least a lot of locals, was had to dip in their pocket and actually put it in. Now, that's hard going to a membership meeting and saying you need 50 cents an hour in your pension fund, or we got to take a cut, and Joe knows how that feels. That's what you really need, I hear, So that you need an equal balance of both union and management to solve it. And you have an actuary, which I think when a couple finance, I know we're bugging finance, we should get the guy that we already have to do the presentation over again. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sheldon. Mr. Weiner, Councilmember Diller, did you have your hand?
No.
And, okay. Mr. Weiner, then Mr. Street. Mr.
Thank,
Bell.
Thank you. A lot of folks refer to this as the pension board. This is not the pension board. This is the Newcastle County Employees Retirement System Board of Trustees, which means no one is qualified to serve as a trustee unless they understand that they are a fiduciary, they fully understand the scope of a fiduciary duty, and understand that they cannot delegate their fiduciary duty to an auditor or any other third-party entity. I'm again making the same plea that I made 10 years ago when I was speaking to deaf ears. We have done ourselves a disservice by not decreasing, but increasing the percentage of well-intentioned, loyal county employees that are members of the union that are not qualified. And so it behooves us all to move in the position that Tom Croft had recommended 10 years ago when he resigned in frustration as a subject matter expert of this Board of Trustees. The second thing I want to note is that the stock market is now doing record highs in the Dow Jones. Now, there's still certainly parts of the economy that have not recovered, certainly employment. But portfolios, both public and private portfolios, have recovered. It's counties across the country have fully recovered. We've had some mismanagement due to lack of subject matter expertise that leaves us with a pension that is underfunded at 74% by today's definition and 54% by the definition about to be adapted. There's no way you can minimize that. The pension board is supporting a position now that I've been urging for over 10 years, and that is we need more subject matter expertise.
Thank you, Mr. Weiner. Mr. Street, Mr. Bell, and Mr. Hollins.
Mr. President, I'm going to be brief and get out because I'm anxious to see who's really in charge.
Yes.
But, you know, over the last month or so, maybe more, I watched the emails hurled back and forth. And it's one thing, you know, when something's said by the council member, because every member of this council is quite capable of defending him or herself. But the day we got to, clearly, in my view, some folks being elitist, turning in, belittling people, basically saying, because they have a degree, because they don't have a degree. I think it's wrong. It's inappropriate. And it's not a level that I think we as a government should stoop to. And I really would appreciate it if folks would stop insulting people, insulting their intelligence based on degrees they have or don't have or what they're in. I quite frankly, you know, one of the things you've done, I think, very well, as president, has called for order, and there have been calls for severity during the tenure of other presidents. And I think that what you say to people, how you say it, and how you present it is part and parcel of that civility. And I call on you as president to urge others to stop belittling people in the thick of these conversations and debates.
Mr. Bell.
Thank you, Mr. President. You know, I sit here council meeting after council meeting, and I try to research, take a look, be reasonable, be respectful of everyone, my counterparts. And when I look at a resume and I see the background, the institutional background, very strong in HR, and I heard what I heard from, which we all heard from our chief administrative officer. That has nothing whatsoever to do with me being a councilman, as to show, or we'll see in a few minutes, on who has the power. It's not a matter of who has the power. I'm not in it for that. I'm in it to try to represent my constituents. I'm in it to try to represent the employees of Newcastle County and be reasonable with things. It's a matter of, in a few minutes, we'll see who's going to show the power. So I resent that. I resent it from the standpoint that I try to be reasonable and look at what's before me. And at the end of the committee meeting, I reached out as an individual council person to the chief human resources officer to ask, was there an opening? Would there be an opening on the Human Resources Advisory Board? And she reached out to the administration. We communicated back and forth, and you've heard what her presentation was tonight. My basis of questioning and asking is twofold. Number one, I respect what was presented by the chief administrative officer of this county government, and I look at the resume and strongly feel that this individual wants to volunteer his time, and I can appreciate that. But personally, I think that he better fits the Human Resources Advisory Board. This isn't about power. This isn't about, in a couple minutes, we're going to see who has the power. That's not what it's about for me.
Mr. Hobbins.
Thank you, Mr. President. I think most people would agree this has gone far beyond a discussion about someone serving on the pension board, as Councilman Weiner referred to it after he told us the correct name, then he called it the pension board. But the fact is we've gone over this for an hour or better in committee meeting. We've sat down here tonight. We've gone over it for at least an hour. It's at a point where it's getting to be completely ridiculous. And I strongly encourage Councilwoman Kilpatrick to call for the vote, up or down, let's resolve this issue and move forward to the rest of the agenda.
I call for the vote.
It's a motion that has to be seconded.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any against? Ayes have it.
Mr. Bell?
No.
Mr. Bullock?
Yes.
Mr.
Cartier? Yes.
Mr. Diller?
Yes.
Mr. Holmes?
Yes.
Mr. Kilpatrick?
Yes.
Mr. Powers?
No.
Mr. Retta?
Yes.
Mr. Sheldon?
Yes.
Mr. Smiley?
I wanted to be the deciding vote, yes.
Mr. Street?
Yes.
Mr. Tackett?
No.
Mr. Weiner?
No.
Mr. President, the roll call goes 9 yes, 4 no.
Thank you. We will move on now with the agenda. I want to thank all of you for your discussion on this important issue. I allowed more time because I knew all of you wanted to speak and everyone was heard, so we will proceed. I want to thank all who gave testimony to this important decision. R13-102. Mr. Retta.
Thank you. I'd like to have R13-102 placed before council for consideration and adoption.
Second.
Mr. Ratter.
Thank you. What this is an expansion down at the mall. It's fellas, it's up near I-95 and right near Cavalier Country Club townhomes, which would be to, if you can look at the picture, it'd be on the right-hand side of the homes, and Cavalier Country Club is down a little further, which will be where it starts to taper in. The jobs and the contractors, I believe, are going tomorrow to talk to Cabela's, and
I just place before council for tonight's vote. By the way, excuse me, Mr. President, the mall has spent $150 million, and this is an additional $30 million that they'll be spending on this.
It's
a motion.
Okay. Any questions or comments? Public comment? Madam Clerk?
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Bullock?
Yes.
Cardiac?
Yes.
Bullock?
Yes.
Mr.
Holmes? Yes.
Ms. Kopacka?
Yes.
Mr. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Retta?
Yes.
Mr. Sheldon?
Yes. Yes.
Mr. Smiley?
Yes.
Mr. Street?
Yes.
Mr. Tackett?
Yes.
Mr. Weiner?
Yes.
Mr. President, roll card reveals 12 yes, 1 absent.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. R13-103. Mr. Sheldon?
Yes. Mr. Chair, I would like Resolution 13-103 be read in by title only for its consideration and adoption.
Second.
Resolution 13-103, plan of Mill Creek Fire Company, Milford, south side of Kirkwood Highway, approximately 300 feet of Woodland and Drive, Major Lane Development Plan, that proposes to expand a mezzanine storage area, increasing the total gross floor area from 19,999 square feet to 20,778 square feet, CR zone.
Mr. Sheldon.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Mr. President, just very quickly, it adds 777 square feet for mechanical area that's needed for extra for the storage that's on top of the building. Once the building was being built, yeah, the plot plan is just up there, sir, so you're not missing anything. But on Thank top you. Of the building itself, they needed a mezzanine to be able to put the mechanical and the rest of the storage to be able to get in and out and go up to the roof level. So this is what is needed. It's a small little addition on top of it. I will say, everybody says sometimes the Unified Development Code doesn't work. In this case, it did, because there was a change in the deed and on the notes. The note said that if it goes over 20,000 square foot, it has to go before council for number one to be major. And number two, also any changes to the building, aesthetics or something, has to come before council and gets voted on. So I'm glad to see it's a non-controversial thing. I've heard nothing but positive about this, but it just goes to show that this does work. So that's all I have.
Any questions for Mr. Sheldon?
Only comment, Mr. President.
Comment, Mr. Holland.
To Councilman Shelton, it doesn't work when you disagree with it. Otherwise, it works.
The next one we'll see. Yeah. Okay, yeah. This is 20,000 square foot, yeah. Which right across from the next one, which is only about 5.
Right.
Mr. Cartier.
Yes, I'm going to be supporting this evening. I think it's incumbent upon county government to do everything reasonable within our means to help our volunteer fire service continue their mission, deliver life safety services to our communities, and to do so on a volunteer basis that confers an enormous value to the citizens of this county. And we always have to recognize that, because if we had to run a professional fire service in this county, people would be screaming in pain from the property tax increase we'd be doing. So my hats are off to these people, and any way I could help them personally, I'm all for it, and I intend to use my vote to that extent tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Cartier. Any other comments or questions to Mr. Sheldon? Public comment? Seeing none, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Bullock?
Yes.
Mr. Cartier?
Yes.
Yes.
Mr. Holland?
Yes.
Mr. Patrick?
Yes.
Mr.
Yes.
Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Retta?
Yes.
Mr. Sheldon?
Yes.
Mr. Smiley?
Yes.
Mr. Street? Mr. Tackett?
Yes.
Mr. Weiner?
Yes.
Mr. President, the roll card reveals 12 yes, 1 absent.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. R13-104, Mr. Sheldon.
Yes, Resolution 13-104 be read by title only for its consideration and adoption.
Second.
Resolution 13-104 to amend the declaration of restrictions dated October 8, 1992, in regards to the Duncan Road, Delaware 18808, also known as New Castle County Tax Parcel Number 08-039-30210.
Mr. Sheldon.
Yes. I don't know if the general manager is here, Dave Culver. I tried to get a hold of him. before. If he's not here,
we got George Haggerty here.
Could I ask that George Haggerty come up?
Please,
Mr. Haggerty. The only reason why I'm going to ask Mr. Haggerty to come up is because there is quite confusion. And Mr. Weiner, I did notice last time, asked for the decision from land use for the deed restriction change and the recommendation from the planning board. And we talked about everything but the deed restriction at that meeting. And basically, when you had the public comment, and of course you can read this, and I'm sure it's online, it said most of the comments were unrelated to specific changes proposed in a deed restriction application. However, it's noted that the existing Royal Farms development plan cannot move forward unless the deed restriction application with the changes that they're asking for is approved, meaning no traffic, no even underground pipes, which a lot of people were asking for in my district, I'm going to say, and so far about the safety conditions of the children and so forth, because the traffic comes with DelDOT and is being done. I will say the applicant, before I ask Mr. Haggerty, the applicant was very nice to meet with I'm going to say their names, but are only ones, because I did get emails asking for names of people that are changing their minds in my district, which I would never give a name out to somebody, so they could be harassed or something like that. But it's on record about Olivia and Bill McClintock, so I have to say their name, that they get a new fence put up. That's right. They get new barriers put up, which they are picking out, and the applicant is working with them, which is costing an extra $20,000. And they are the ones that directly back up to the ingress, that egress that goes in to the Royal Farms, I must say. A lot of people called and said, well, how come I'm not getting something, was what one person literally said. But they're not by Royal Farms, as I looked up there on partial view. They're actually by the office plaza. There's a road that goes by side Royal Farms, so which is going to stay there, of course, as a driveway. And, of course, there's a sound music center there. So I just wanted that to be noted on the record. And, Mr. Haggerty, could you tell us what the deed restriction is before we bring the applicant that we are exactly voting on today?
George Haggerty, Assistant General Manager of the Land Use Department. Hours late, Dave had to get home. There were some deed restrictions. This property was a classic property that was on a farm at one point in time, was parceled off, and there were some pieces that were left against the Kirkwood Highway, and there were some restrictions that were put on the property. And basically those restrictions were designed to kind of provide some security and some voluntary assurances. I'll just read from the report. There were results, significant and lengthy discussions between the community and the property owners. The restrictions were designed to protect the community from unwanted commercial uses and to limit other potential adverse impacts to the neighboring properties to enhance landscaping and parking restrictions. No signs. It's all on the first page of the report. The proposed changes will eliminate the no parking areas, the former landscaping requirements that were put in place to screen the residential properties located at 2102 Duncan Road from the existing industrial buildings and the parking. In addition, the proposed changes, while maintaining the ground sign limitations, will permit one directional sign to be located on Duncan Road. So what you have is property that had some restrictions on it. The property, the use is going to be adjusted somewhat. In other words, corner gas station to a larger corner gas station with some longer hours of activity. And in the process of going through that, there were some restrictions that needed to be adjusted. In order to do that, they have to come before council, petition council, to have those restrictions removed. And new restrictions will be placed on as the plan processes through.
But basically, what the restriction was a house that is now zoned commercial, so it's no longer really a house, but it is a house there that needs more vegetation, more rights to go back forward, and for parking area is the way I read the report is what we're voting on tonight.
That's just
generally. Okay, we're not voting on traffic studies. We're not voting on anything else. That comes with the plan itself.
That comes with the plan.
I just wanted to make sure what we're voting on tonight, which is a deed restriction.
Tonight you're voting on a lifting of a deed restriction.
Okay. And, of course, there's a lot of other stuff the applicant can talk about that later. I just wanted to get that clear because I got a lot of emails about the safety of the children and stuff like that. And, you know, we're legally bound by law, and council to council can testify this, that we have to vote on the subject matter. And so thank you very much. And we did have a noise pollution study done that I asked the applicant to do. And when I went upstairs, he made me laugh again, made fun of me, as he always does. He said, Kirkwood Highway, there would be an engineering night gratitude if it got any noisier than what it is. You'd probably have to have a rocket ship go off. So the noise pollution and everything was taken care of that I asked for. The fences was taken care of. I will have to wish the applicant thank you for doing all that and listening to me. The applicant wants to come up and speak. He can to you and to the rest of the board. We had lengthy discussions about this. So.
Thank you, Mr. Sheldon. The applicant, please come. State your name, please.
Thank you, President. For the record, my name is Sean Tucker. I represent the applicant this evening, who is Rural Farms, also known as Two Farms. Thank you for that summary, Councilman Sheldon. I will give, if I may, a brief thumbnail sketch. We did discuss this at some length at Land Use Committee, but there may be some additional folks in the audience who were not at that meeting who may want to have some of this detail. The original deed restrictions applied only to the rear parcel, which I'm outlining with my red pointer, did not apply to the center parcel where there's a home that's abandoned, or the front parcel, which is the existing Sunoco gas station. A couple of other points, the deed restrictions that were originally put in on this rear parcel were primarily designed to protect the residential home that is here and abandoned. And at that time, the center parcel was zoned residential. The center parcel is now zoned commercial. So the deed restriction provision that we're proposing to change originally required landscaping to remain or vegetation to remain in this area to provide a buffer for the house that is now coming down. In fairness, other folks probably benefit somewhat from that existing vegetation. So that is why what you see tonight and what has been presented to both the department and the planning board is what I would describe as an extensive landscaping plan that is not only taking the place of the original vegetation that existed, but I would submit exceeds the original vegetation that existed significantly. And I'll briefly explain how. First of all, you have a line of Leland cypresses that are being proposed along here that are offset, that are virtually side by side. You need to leave about 4 feet between them for growth. But by offsetting them, you're allowed to essentially minimize that 4 feet really down to 2 feet, because when you offset, you can bring one in behind that kind of fills the gap that's created in the front. These are proposed 10-footers, far beyond the code. This number of trees that's literally creating this wall, not required by code, far exceeds the code. There's also a fence that's being added, and the drop-off from this elevation to the actual ground level where the Rural Farms will sit is about 7 feet. So you've got a 7-foot wall, you've got about a 6-foot fence, and then you've got 10-foot Lelands along that fence line that grow on average, if they're properly maintained, about 3 feet a year. Significant, far beyond the vegetation that exists here today that is being removed. In addition, there is significant vegetation being placed around the office building that already exists. It's already there today. A lot of that vegetation was required by the prior property owner for whatever reason was not installed. We're going to install it, even though it's not our fault, but we're going to install it and fix that situation. Additionally, you see street trees. Not required by code under the existing situation, required by code under the proposed application today. And, you know, for those who travel up down Crookwood Highway, think about how many storefronts you see with street trees. You really don't see street trees on Crookwood Highway. Those are going to be added in as well. Because we are essentially redeveloping the site, there are variances that we're going for that are on the agenda for Thursday evening. We're not here to talk about the variances. Some people may want to talk about that, but as Mr. Haggerty said, we're here about the deed restrictions, so we're going to focus on that. I'll simply say the restrictions or the variances that we're seeking are not uncommon for a type of infill redevelopment project such as you see here. There are two legal standards that the department and the planning board wrestled with in its recommendation. It's dated February 19th of this year, and these come directly out of the UDC at section 31130D. Is the change being proposed in the best interest of the parties to the deed restriction? And the parties are the current property owners and Newcastle County. And two, is the proposal consistent with the planning goals of Newcastle County? The Department of Land Use answered in the affirmative to both. The Planning Board answered in the affirmative to both unanimously. So without getting into the report, which you've all had and had a chance to look at, and I'm happy to dive into it if you'd like, but without regurgitating all that, this was a unanimous vote by the Planning Board and supported by the Department because the legal standard was met. This deed restriction change is better than the current conditions on the site, which were being protected by the original deed restriction, in a nutshell. Thank you, President. Thank you, members of Council. I'm certainly happy to answer any questions you may have. Mr. Boss is also here. He is our civil engineer who could also shed light on any questions that you may have related to engineering and or drainage.
Mr. Sheldon and Mr. Weiner.
Yeah, just one question. I went through by Wisvis today, which is on Kirkwood Highway, which is about the only green area. Would you say, cause, and that's a smaller area, because that's where Limestone Road and Kirkwood Highway is, if anybody, well, outside my district would kind of know that part of my district. Wouldn't you say that it's something like that, except you got all those trees?
I would say, in terms of the redevelopment aspects of this, it is very similar, but will exceed the landscaping, particularly with this wall of trees. And also, I should have mentioned, but you had mentioned, Councilman, the McClintocks, who are here this evening, were adding significant additional vegetation for them on their own property and fencing as well because of their proximity to this access point. And they did work with us and communicate with us, and we were able to accomplish that. But yes.
And I appreciate that. They were my biggest concern out of this whole thing.
Yes, and we heard you loud and clear, Councilman. I mean, you made clear to us you were concerned about a multitude of issues, particularly the buffering and the noise and the neighbors. And we did go, I think, to significant extent to reach out and talk to folks who were willing to talk to us.
Mr. Weiner.
Thank you. At the Land Use Committee meeting, the citizens spoke, and I had responded that the counsel for the applicant had graciously offered to extend deed restrictions, but had no community civic association contact, and I said, you know, you've got a few days left to take advantage of this offer. Subsequent to that, I want to go on record as saying I did receive an email from a person who didn't identify himself as representing the Civic Association, but simply asking me what are the elements that should go into a set of deed restrictions. Although I'm an attorney and I've drafted these before, I don't sit in the capacity as an attorney. So I did what is ethically incumbent upon me, and I said you should seek private legal counsel. I then copied the applicant's attorney, Mr. Tucker, and copied the four attorneys in the private sector who were land use experienced attorneys and recommended that this person be well served to contact any of them. I did speak to Mr. Tucker this evening. He said he had not yet heard, but he graciously offered to extend the period of time beyond tonight to work with any entity that would contact him. And I'm going to say it again, and I know Councilman Sheldon agrees, it would be unfortunate for the community not to take advantage of that gracious offer.
Yes, Councilman, just for the record, I did offer, and that offer stands. And this offer was also made at a February 14th meeting that went on for about 2 hours with some of the neighbors who had concerns that if they wanted to be parties to a private deed restriction, giving them control over any future change, that we would welcome that. We would even create the legal entity if they wanted us to accomplish that. I will share with you that we've agreed to do that for the McClintocks. They're the only ones who have asked to be part of that entity. And we did that because we heard people are upset because of some alleged past promises that predate us. So to avoid any confusion in the future regarding promises, we're willing to give folks the power to enforce deed restrictions, preventing any future change and requiring that landscaping stay maintained. Besides it being a code issue that the county can enforce, privately they would have a right to enforcement. And if it wasn't properly maintained and they had to bring an action, their legal fees would be paid if they were successful, the way we've drafted this document. So we've, I think, gone to significant ends to try to address the concerns we've heard about promises being kept. We intend to keep our promises, and we'll back that up in writing. And so the offer stands for those who would like to become part of that deed restriction. We'll keep that open, certainly through the end of the week, for anybody who wants to contact me.
That's more than reasonable. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tucker.
Thank you, sir.
Public comment.
My name is Larry Hall, and I'm the president of the Civic Association of Voluntary Marine with Duncan Woods. The president resigned, so I was vice president, so I took over. The only question I have, Mr. Tucker did meet with me many times. The only comment he made, that place is going to be 16 pumps, and that's the size of the building. That's the smallest one they do in Delaware. My friend Rick Island got one a lot smaller. I just wanted him to make a comment on that. Mr. Tucker, is that one in Fenwick Island? How many pumps does it have? And how big is it? I've seen in your street. It's a lot smaller than what you're proposing. I would like just to hear that answer because you made that comment at least 6 or 7 times.
Excuse me, sir. There's no Q&A. There's no question and answer here. Just please make your statement.
So somebody could just come up and make a statement, and then you can't challenge that statement because I know, Councilman, you got a couple of calls about that. So could you make a comment on that?
I did not ride down to Fenwick Island.
I visited myself. I don't have a picture. I can get you a picture. I know it's a lot smaller. It's got 8 pumps. So we're going to propose 16 pumps. We have 60 signatures, and most of the complaints were there's too many pumps on me there. If you made it smaller, you wouldn't have one argument for anybody on Wild Cherry Lane. There's 26 homes there, and they're all against it because it's going to be too big. That's the only comment I have to make. I mean, I would like to get an answer to that. I mean, can you just make a statement and say when it's not true?
For the record, I'm willing to respond to that rebuttal.
He gets rebuttal.
Okay.
It's rebuttal. Yeah. It's a point of information. As we know, there's no Q&A from witnesses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But as a point of rebuttal.
And point of order.
Yes.
The applicant does get an opportunity to do a rebuttal. I mean, that's yes. Part of it. They will come back up.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Tech. Mr. Tucker?
at the end.
At the end.
Your rebuttal. Mr. Redder has a question.
I'd just like to know from someone who's a little knowledgeable, the Shell station used to be a Texaco gas station across the street from this proposed site. When was it built?
80s.
Nobody knows?
Late 70s, early 80s.
Objection. Oh, we're in public comment. Is this person spoke?
No, Mr. Redder, your question is to whom?
Whoever can answer it. I don't really care. The reason why I want to know this is because the progression of landscaping that we're doing now is over and meets the standards, and this one's over and above. There was another one, Tri-State, the Sounds of Tri-State, right down about 2 doors away. They hardly have any landscape, and it was built in the 90s with the UDC. Nobody said anything about the landscaping there. Little farms now, when they do the pumps, they build a certain size. They build a certain size building, and they go the pumps accordingly. The ones that they have in Fenwick Island and the ones in Maryland are smaller buildings. This is a standard size building now. It's about 4,500 square feet or 5,000 square feet, something like that. That's their standard, and they go higher. To me, I just don't understand. I mean, the area is going to be beefed up, make it look nicer, and it's going to be taking the gas out of the ground that's leaking in there now. So, somebody ever bring that up years before? And they're drinking water.
Thank you, Mr. Rutter. Which public comment? Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Rutter's statement, or should I give my presentation?
Your presentation.
Okay, thank you.
Please.
Bill Dunn, president of MLCA. There was some accuracy in what Councilman Sheldon said as far as what you're voting on tonight, and that is the deed restrictions. What is more important, I think, in this circumstance is tonight you're voting on changing a community is what you're voting on.
No, not.
These modifications, these deed restrictions that exist on this parcel are going to have a dramatic impact on the quality of life of the people in the surrounding community and in close proximity to the parcels that they want to combine together to build this facility they want to build. They want to remove about 6 feet of dirt, tear down trees that exist there, remove the old residential house, all these things that provide a buffer between them and Kirkwood Highway, or many of them, to put in dramatic amounts of asphalt, metal, stuff that's going to allow a resonation of sound back into their community. So, yes, you are voting on deed restrictions, but more importantly, you're voting on the quality of life of your constituents there, Councilman Sheldon. Deed restrictions, as I've noted previously, and I don't want to get marred in it, are something that really needs to be considered in how they were established. It was individual property owners sitting down with other property owners and said, we're going to apply rules and regulations to this parcel that are held in perpetuity or until the surrounding community and everybody is in an agreement to change it. It's not something like a zoning change. It is dramatic in how it impacts the community. They said something about the gas station, how it would have little impact because there's already one there. The present one runs 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. They want to go 24/7. The sound issue I just hit on, the rezoning of that residential property was caught up in the broad rezonings that occurred right after the UDC implemented. And finally, if you guys give these guys approval tonight, Thursday night they show up in front of Board of Adjustments. And despite what that shows, they're asking for 12 variances. And where, if you go down, zero buffer yard capacity, they're reducing them all, many, if not all of them, to zero. Zero street trees along Duncan Road, where 7 are required.
time.
Zero street trees on Kirkwood Highway where
Mr. Dunn, required. The time has expired, sir.
The community is still willing to consider and talk with the developer. It's just we need more time. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments from the public? Please come. Please state your name for the record.
Bill McClintock.
Please speak in the mic.
Okay, Bill McClintock. Yes. So we live at 2112. We're to the left of the other property here. Just wanted to mention that Mr. Tucker and Rural Farms has spoken with us on multiple occasions about this. We appreciate that they've been willing to reach out and try to negotiate compromise. I think it's fair to say that nobody in the community is happy with the change. I'm also thinking that due to the nature of the current properties, there's going to be change inevitable. So the question is just how is it going to change and how do we want to deal with that? I would encourage the community members to keep that dialogue up with Mr. Tucker or maybe even establish one, because it doesn't seem like outside of us there's really been much one. And I'm certainly afraid that people's concerns aren't going to be addressed because there's no dialogue happening there. I'll certainly say in our case, like I said, it's we're in a much better situation than when we were in October when this issue first came up. So that's all I wanted to say.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Mr. Weiner.
Yes. Your name again, sir?
Bill McClintock.
Mr. McClintock, it is so refreshing after 17 years to hear a citizen speak responsibly rather than just grandstanding. Thank you.
Public comment? Please state your name for the record.
Hello, my name's Olivia McClintock. I'm sorry, I need to adjust this for height.
Yes.
Thank you. I am Bill McClintock's wife, and we are, as he said, at 2112 Duncan Road. At the beginning of this discussion, there was very little consideration given to our property. In fact, none. And I also would like to give a thank you to Rural Farms and to Mr. Tucker for changing that. We have had a considerable amount of discussion with them and seem to be coming to an agreement to make this a bit more palatable. As a mother of a 18-month-old child and living in such close proximity to what will be a substantial amount of construction, one of the things that jumped out to me as an immediate concern was the existing problems with leakage that is in the Sunoco property. I would also like to make an appeal to the rest of my neighbors and community to consider that one of our concerns as a family is that this property undeveloped will continue to be a problem and that may in fact further itself into the Kane property, which currently is a home, and though we would probably like to see residential continue there, we certainly don't want to see a depressed property as well. So we would like to see more communication with the community. As I've repeatedly told Rural Farms, we have a concern about some DLDOT changes. We are more supportive of this development now than we were in September, October. Mr. Tucker has agreed to meet with us in DLDOT, and I am hoping that the community, additional community members, will also join us in that. The majority of those concerns that remain now are about the safety of school children because there's such close proximity to the school zone, and obviously our own safety because our driveway will be shared with the Rural Farms entrance. That's completion of my comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, Mr. White.
Yes. What would you recommend in terms of safety, in terms of sidewalks or demarcation for the pedestrian zone?
I could go on quite substantially. One of the first things is obviously crossing. You put a store in any community, you're going to have an increase in school children because you are two blocks away from the school. So I do have a big concern about the pedestrians that are crossing there, specifically the school children that walk past our home every day to get to school, and the fact that they will now have a new route to a brand new shiny store that will be there. The other is that there is a flashing school zone light that is right on that entrance that doesn't flash. And obviously, if there's going to be an increase in traffic, that should be fixed so that it is now flashing. I believe that Rural Farms has planned in to put some sidewalk there. I don't know where that could be continued. I do know that some of my neighbors have a concern about additional sidewalk, again, to provide additional safety. I'm certainly not a developer. I'm an engineer by trade, but not in these things. But I would say anything that could be done to protect the safety of pedestrians, and especially the school children that ride bikes in and through the property and up and down Duncan Road, would be my predominant concern. And, of course, the traffic backing further up into what is now a school crossing that has 2 to 3 crossing guards is a huge concern for all of us. Again, I feel these issues are more DLDOT issues. What Rural Farms has shown us over the past few months is they have put a substantial investment in time in trying to address our concerns, and I think that if they have a little more time to speak with the community, they may be able to work out something there as well. But DLDOT is really the next play in terms of those things, and those are things that we would like to see them put in place to add a little more confidence as a resident that children are going to be protected and motorists will be warned. My other concern is about trucks turning down there, mistakenly down Duncan Road. We have brought that issue up with Rural Farms as well, and they have told us that they tend to be very adamant with their delivery people about where to turn in, and that the turnoff would be off of Kirkwood Highway. I only say that sometimes you simply cannot control what delivery people may do. Again, as a resident with a young child, the concern is that trucks may accidentally turn down Duncan Road, and it is a school zone. It is a residential area. No one wants to see an 18-wheeler coming past an elementary school, and certainly you don't want to see a elementary school child hit by a truck. So if there is something that we can do in terms of axle restrictions or those type of things that may decrease the chance of that, or certainly make it very unappealing for that road to become an alternate, that would be great as well.
Thank you for your thoughtful comments. I hope that the applicant and Mr. Tucker will listen carefully.
They have so far.
Councilmember Kilpatrick.
Thank you. Great questions that you brought up, and I did at one point have children that went to that school, so I'm very aware of that back entrance. When you meet with DLDOT, you might want to ask them about the Safe Routes to Schools program that installs sidewalks between two points. So knowing that, you know, if there's a crossing guard at one point and that there's a sidewalk that goes in a direction or two from there, it's an application that the school actually has to put in, but it's a federal program.
Ah, I see.
Thank you, Ms.
Thank you.
Any other public comment? Please come forward. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Anthony Casala. I'm a resident on Duncan Road. I've been listening to complaints from the residents, from Mr. Tucker, and my comment is, if this is not resolved this evening, will Denrick step up and take care of the problems that Texaco has now with the leaky oil pumps or tanks that they have in the ground? And hopefully Denrick will do the right thing if this is not resolved. They will actually talk with the owners of Sunoco to rectify that problem, because if it's in the drinking water, we as a community are just learning about these problems. So it should be corrected by the county council, by the county. by the people in this county as well. Because we don't need that. We don't need the oil tanks leaking into our drinking water system. Now that we know that that is a problem, the county cannot overlook this problem. It needs to be corrected, taken care of, whether or not Royal Farms goes along and builds their facility building. And secondly, I don't know how it's going to justify the people who live looking at this new Royal Farms, how that's going to enhance their market value of their home. I think it's definitely going to depreciate the market value of their home. And thirdly, the sidewalks is very important. The sidewalks should be added from Kirkwood Highway to Annapurna School on Duncan Road for the safety of all people going to be utilizing that property. That's about it. I hope I set up what I wanted to say, but I definitely see that this is definitely an ongoing problem that needs to be rectified and corrected with the leaky oil tanks that Texaco has been using for years. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Mr. Smiley.
Yeah, I just want to clarify for you, Denrick. I agree with what you're saying, but Denrick is a state agency, doesn't fall over the county's under the county's jurisdiction, so we would now have no authority of that. Of course, we would support Denrick cleaning it up, but it's not a county department.
Okay.
We have no authority over Denrick.
But we know it's a problem to our community, and it's going to affect our community. We know that. There's nothing we can do about correcting that. That doesn't sound right.
I understand. You just kept saying that the county should clean it up. Clarifying for you that Denrick, which has the authority, is not a county agency.
Okay. And where does the county stand against the state at this point?
Well, I don't know that we're against the state.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
Have Denrick take a look.
All right, then.
Mr. Cartier?
Yes. I don't know if this will give you any reassurance or not, but most of these old gas stations throughout New Castle County have leaky tanks. It's a problem. I represent Eastern Burnie 100 up and down the Philadelphia Pike. Most of the old gas stations polluted the local environment with gas leaks. So I don't think that it's necessarily a threat to your drinking water. Who is your drinking water supplier?
Artesian.
Okay, that's a piped system. This would more or less contaminate groundwater, not your drinking water. So I just want to, you know, make that clear to you. I mean, I would be really alarmed as well if your drinking water was at risk. But these sites are all over the county, and they all have problems. And, you know, I think one of the advantages that you're looking at here with this project is that, you know, certainly they'll have to comply with, you know, environmental cleanup in order to install the new facility. So that's one of the advantages of this project.
Mr. Tackett.
Thank you, PB. The only thing I was going to add to that for the speaker also was is the quickest possible resolution for those leaking tanks is to develop the site.
It's to develop the site.
Because they have to go in there, they have to remove the tanks, they have to clean it up and put this in.
But that's just one thing that will happen if they develop this site. That's just one. It's not the congestion, not the traffic, not the children, not the value of the home that's looking over this Royal Farms. There's not the community that's against it, the small 26-member community. That's it.
Keep them up there.
I mean, the traffic is going to be the biggest problem. More people is going to be the biggest problem. More congested to the school is going to be the biggest problem.
One of the hardest things to realize at a potential issue like a gas station here is, and I've seen this years and years and years ago when I was in the community, that gas stations generally do not generate traffic. What's called is pass-by traffic. People aren't going to drive 2-3 miles out of their way to go to a specific gas station. There are people that's already in the area already anyhow and driving by there. Then they'll stop and go into the gas station. It's either on their way to work, on the way home from work.
Coffee, chicken, whatever.
Right. Maybe they want to grab Royal Farms has dinner. So I guess, you know, they're swinging in there to get some dinner. But
right.
They're generally not driving miles out of their way to just to specifically come over to this one. Some may, but the majority of traffic's not.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
That's why there's 10 miles.
Thank you, Mr. Tackett. Public comment? Please state your name for the record.
Hi, my name is Andrew Hall. My father, Lawrence Hall, spoke a little while ago. He's the president of the Wild Cherry Lane, the Duncan Woods Civic Association. I would just like to state that I don't think this is obvious, but I believe the community feels that my dad and Mr. Dunn, perhaps, are here to speak on behalf of the community today to make their voices heard. I think that's the way our community understands the process. You know, I think that the community believes that tonight's the night that, you know, kind of the rubber hits the road, if you will. So I think from what information I have tonight, it seems to me that there's openness with Mr. Tucker. The community certainly has some concerns yet to be resolved. So therefore, if more time was given, Mr. Tucker's clearly stated that he would be willing to meet with the community, the members that are not present, and that they haven't had a chance to meet thus far. Seems to me that the community would like to take Mr. Tucker up on that and, you know, would need some more time because, as I said, the community feels like this is their night to be heard, and I think my father, tried to make that point, and I just urge county to consider that Council to consider that tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Tucker, you have a rebuttal.
Mm-hmm. Probably.
Thank you, President.
Yes.
If I could just start in the order of the folks who spoke this evening. Mr. Hall was the first speaker. And just so the record's clear, we met with Mr. Hall. His son wasn't present, but we met with Mr. Hall and probably about 10 other neighbors who were representing the community as we understood it for 2 hours on February 14th. And that was a few days after the planning board meeting. And that meeting date was actually referenced in the department's report. And just so we're really clear on this, because the facts are the facts, we were asked, when I say we, I mean me and Mr. Bross and Fred Wittig were asked to leave the room after about 2 hours so these folks could talk amongst themselves, which is certainly reasonable. They met for about a half an hour in private, we waited, and then they came out and they left, which is fine. The McClintocks did reach out to us because Mr. McClintock was actually in that meeting and he actually asked to record it and we said, sure, record it. So it was actually a recording of the entire 2-hour meeting with the community. And we worked with the McClintocks. So we're still open to talking to folks after tonight. We're not going to ask for a continuance because we have spent quite a bit of time meeting with folks, and people have had adequate time to certainly communicate with us. Some have chosen to communicate with us, like the McClintocks. Some have chosen not to. And that's fine. That's their right. But to come to the night of the hearing and say, now this should be postponed, is unfair, and it's unreasonable. But I will give council and the community my word that after tonight, if they want to continue to meet about specific concerns, and their requests are reasonable, we will address them. This is the smallest store, and I'll state it again for the record. Mr. Hall mentioned, I've said it a couple times, I'll say it again. This is currently, today, the smallest store that Royal Farms will build. Wawa, Royal Farms, other chain stores have a certain minimum size they build in a given market, and if they can't get that minimum square footage, they just won't build. As many people suspect, and it's my understanding it's actually accurate, is that these chains, like Royal Farms and Wawa, do not make a lot of money off their gas. They make money off of selling
milk and cookies and sodas and subs, etc. So it's really the convenience store component that is important. I have no doubt there are older stores, and I'm vaguely familiar with the one in Fenwick Island, which I think is actually very old, that are probably smaller. From a market standpoint, Rural Farms has made a determination, not today, but years ago, that they have a minimum size for them to invest significant monies in a given area where they just won't come. Regarding the 60 signatures that were referenced, and as we talked about a little bit at the Land Use Committee meeting, there was a petition we saw that was signed before the landscaping plan was presented to the Planning Board of the Department. So as far as we know, those signatures were generated before anybody saw the significant landscaping plan, street trees, etc. that we're proposing. I've not seen any updated petitions since this was made public and as part of the process. Mr. Sheldon, your comments tonight, somebody said there's some accuracy in them. All of your comments were accurate. So, I thank you for, working with us. I thank you for, bridging some gaps between us and the community, because there's more neighbors than just the McClintocks who support this. There are others in the community who support this that are around us, including the neighbors to the McClintocks to the north, as well as our immediate neighbor to the west, and that's in the record and part of the Planning Department's comments as well. But we heard about this, that you're changing the character of the area. If you approve this, you're changing the character, is what you were told. And the reality is this property was rezoned to CN commercial neighborhood long before we came along. So you're not changing the character. The character is designated on the official Newcastle County zoning map as a commercial designation. That is the character. That is what is intended, and this store is consistent with that. The variances came up again, and I told you they probably would, even though that's not on the agenda tonight. Mr. Dunn is correct. There are some zero variances being sought, and I tried my best to explain this to Mr. Dunn. He was at the two-hour meeting on February 14th. But the reason that we're seeking zero variances in some cases, even though you see this and zero street trees, even though you see this extensive plan, which is part of the record in an exhibit, by the way, that gets recorded, so we have to build what we're showing you. Not that we wouldn't, but that's why these things get recorded. You have to ask for a zero buffer, because as soon as you go below a certain width, it doesn't matter how many trees you put in. You have to seek a 100% variance. It's just the way the code works, and it's a matter of law how these have to be presented to the Board of Adjustment. So even though, again, you hear about these zero variances, in actuality, this is the plan that is proposed. This is the same plan the Board of Adjustment will see, and this is the same plan that will be recorded if all of you vote in favor of this, which shows this extensive landscaping that exceeds, and I'll say, anything I've ever seen on Kirkwood Highway. And I've lived in Delaware all my entire life, and I regularly travel Kirkwood Highway. In terms of sidewalks, I ran through this pretty quickly, but since it's come up, I'd like to address it with a little bit more detail. We are putting in sidewalks along Duncan and coming around along Kirkwood Highway. If Deldot is amenable, we will put in other sidewalks off our property, but we can't control that. That lies with Deldot and its discretion. And I do think there are some neighbors that are candidly concerned about where those sidewalks may go and how they may affect their frontages. So we're trying to be concerned about the neighbor's concerns and balancing that against other neighbor concerns, and we'll continue to work in that process. But we are supplying sidewalks on our property where we're legally permitted to do so. In terms of drainage, just one other factor real quick, there is no drainage compliance situation on the site today. There will be with an updated plan, so that's another benefit besides the gas tank or leaking gas tank potential issue. That's a benefit to the community. And lastly, we heard about homes looking over Rural Farms and that being a concern. If I may, let me share with you, and I guess for Mr. Boyle's help with the PowerPoint, I didn't get into this, again, trying to keep it short earlier, but if we go to the, maybe a couple slides in, Mr. Boyle, I can help demonstrate. One more. Okay. You heard about the allegation, and again, these were presented to the planning board, by the way. This is nothing new that folks are seeing tonight. You heard about a concern that homes would overlook the rural farms. This is a line-of-sight picture, and I apologize, President, it might be difficult to see this from your vantage point, but we had Duffield take a look at what the line-of-sight would be for somebody standing outside of their home from two different locations, just to get a flavor for the dynamics of this site and the redevelopment. And because there is an 8-foot retaining wall, and because you'll have yielding cypresses, the line of sight is really dramatically limited by this buffering that we're proposing. So if you were standing here along Lansom Avenue, and you were looking at this in this direction, which is essentially a southeast, at the store, because of the 7-8-foot retaining wall, and because of the 10-foot Leland's, and because of the fence, if you were standing there, your line of sight would be approximately looking at this peak. And that's with new 10-foot trees that haven't grown in yet. And again, the average growth rate is about 3 feet a year. Eventually, that becomes a non-issue for a neighbor. Mr. Bull, if you would push to the next slide, please. We took a second line of sight. We heard from some people that live back in this cul-de-sac area. If you're standing right about here, in this cul-de-sac, and you're looking through, this is what you'd be looking at. And it would be a very similar line of sight. So none of the neighbors, at least from those two vantage points, and I would suggest that's a pretty sweeping area. It covers pretty much any vantage point you could think of between point A to point B where we got to those two slides. You're not looking over the rural farm store. It's just not the way it's going to work. It's a misunderstanding. We've tried to explain that, but it's not going to work like that. This buffering is far superior than what was there originally, which was intended only to protect the house. This is in the planning board and department's recommendation. The house that is now going to be removed and the house that is on property that is now zoned commercial. I think I hit all the points. If there's anything I missed, if anybody has any questions, I see Councilman Cartier.
Cartier.
Yes. Just very succinctly, Mr. Dunn spoke about deed restrictions.
Yes, sir.
Private covenants typically between individuals and property owners in an area. How is it the county councils in the midst of potentially relieving deed restrictions? I wonder if you could just comment on that.
Yes. The deed restrictions are staying intact with the exception of, and I say deed restrictions, the ones that are in the county's name that you're the beneficiary of, are staying intact with the exception of this landscaping plan that's now going to be attached. And it's going to allow us to remove some buffering that exists right in this area here that was originally remaining there to protect the home. Also, this parking bleeds over a little bit into this parcel, so that's being revised. So the deed restrictions that the county is the beneficiary of will remain fully intact. They will be amended predominantly by this exhibit only. We've also offered Councilman Cartier, and we're doing this with the McClintocks, to enter into a set of private deed restrictions that the county won't be burdened with. And they will be between us and the McClintocks, or us and an organization that's created if enough folks want to sign up. They will then have the ability, legally, to enforce this same plan. So if for some reason the county didn't want to enforce it, which I'm sure you would, because you do these things, you enforce these things, but if you didn't, individual property owners would have the right, and the way I write these things is, if they succeed in court, they get their legal fees reimbursed. Also, it enables us to add additional things that maybe the county doesn't want to be a party to, like with the McClintocks, we've offered to put in a speed bump, we've offered to put in some special directional signs, we've offered to put in about $20,000 worth of landscaping on their property and fencing, which is a significant investment by Rural Farms. We don't want to burden the county with being a party to that, because that's on private land, so that'll be part of our private deed restriction with the McClintocks. I hope that answered your question.
We're working on an old set of deed restrictions that ran to the enforcement of the county.
Correct.
And it was up to the discretion of council to modify or set aside.
Correct, as long as we meet the legal standard.
Okay.
Which we submit we have, and the planning board and the department would agree in their recommendation.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Weiner. Thank you. The expectancy of someone who buys a home
on a major road or near a major intersection is such that over time there'll be more traffic. And living near an intersection with used to be four gas stations, now only three that I can see, I directly understand that. I bought the house knowing that traffic would get greater on the major roads, and the only only the fourth gas station, which is no longer a gas station but has been converted to a non-gas station use, is blocked from my view due to the progressive willingness of the applicant, same applicant you have here, to work with our community. I'm not saying this in any other sense, that I understand that, and all of us, unless we own or buy a property that's at a major intersection, we understand that that's what's going to happen. It's an expectancy.
Hey, Councilman, the only thing I would add is, even though traffic is not necessarily the issue this evening, that's part of the DLDOT and the County Department of Land Use Review, we are actually giving up a significant swath of land along Duncan Road so that lane, that right-hand turn lane, can be expanded. And in addition, we're closing what is really an older and considered today dangerous open access that the Sunoco station has that will be closed. So we're actually, again, not part of the deed restriction process, but since you mentioned traffic, we are working on those issues. And we think, and I think DLDOT thinks, that we're making actually a safer movement here, which today, like I said, you've got people that actually dart in right into that opening because it's all a wide open mouth all along Kirkwood Highway.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Mr. Sheldon, are you ready to call for the vote?
Mr. President, I'm sorry, Councilman, but I'm going to have to leave, Mr. President. I'm going to ask for permission to leave. If Councilman Sheldon is calling for the vote, this meeting tonight has taken far more time than I had expected, and I have some personal stuff to take care of.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Not a problem, Mr. President. I did have one question, but you know what? It's irrelevant. If we're voting on the deed restrictions, number one. And number two, one question. Nobody on Wild Cherry Lane actually butts up to the Royal Farms, the way I'm looking at this. The Royal Farms itself. Not the office building, but Royal Farms.
That's correct. I mean, if you look at the zoning map and the parcel map, correct. You have a backing up to the existing building.
Okay. The only reason why I asked that is because the two phone calls, everybody says, that Royal Farm butts right up to my house. Why am I not getting something? And, but not to the Royal Farms, and that's why I wanted to ask you specifically.
That's correct.
Royal Farms. So thank you on that, because I didn't think so either, but I wanted to make sure. So, Mr., if no further ado, no questions, I'll call for the vote.
Second. Move it.
Madam Clerk.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Bullock?
Yes.
Mr.
Yes.
Mr. Diller?
Yes.
Mr. Hines?
Yes.
Patrick?
Yes.
Mr. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Bratta?
Yes.
Mr. Sheldon?
Yes.
Mr. Smiley?
Yes.
Mr. Street?
Yes.
Mr. Tackett?
Yes.
Mr. Weiner?
Yes.
Mr. President, roll call vote 13, yes.
Thank you. R13-105, Mr. Smiley.
Mr. President, I'd like to make a motion Councilman Hollis not be allowed to leave. I couldn't get a vote before he left. Okay.
Mr. Smiley.
Yes. I'd like to request that resolution R13-105 be read by title only.
Mr. Smiley.
Yes, Mr. President. This resolution will be part of the FY 2014 budget package that this council will address in the future. With that, I make a motion to table.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
The ayes have it. Moving on to ordinances. Ordinance 13-019. Ms. Kilpatrick.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that ordinance 13-019 be read by title only and placed before council for its consideration.
Second.
Ordinance 13-019 to amend Castle County Code Chapter 26, Human Resources, Article 3, Merit System Regarding Attendance and the Minimum Increment in which leave hours may be recorded.
Ms. Kilpatrick.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Yes.
This is kind of a housekeeping ordinance, and it makes the code consistent with the common practice. Within the code, we are allowed to record time in one-quarter-hour increments. Starting in June of 2012, the Human Resources Officer required that leave be recorded in one-half-hour increments. We are going back to the one, if this passes, we will go back to recording time in one-quarter hour increments.
Thank you. Comments or questions from the council? Public comment? Seeing none, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Bullock?
Yes.
Yes.
Ms. Diller?
Yes.
Mr. Hollins? Ms. Kilpatrick?
Yes.
Mr. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Retta?
Yes.
Mr. Sheldon?
Yes.
Mr. Smiley?
Yes.
Mr. Street?
Yes.
Mr. Tackett?
Yes.
Mr. Weiner?
Yes.
Mr. President, the roll call vote is 12 yes, 1 absent.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Ordinance 13-020, Mr. Powers.
Yes, Mr. President, I move that ordinance 13-020 be read by title only and placed before council for its consideration and adoption.
Second.
Ordinance 13-020 to provide for the installation of Granville streetlights with optional poles in the Lums Common Estate subdivision that will be 100 and for a light tax based on the cost of street.
Mr. Powers.
As per title.
Comments or questions? Public comment? Seeing none. Madam Clerk.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Bullock?
Yes.
Cartier?
Yes.
Diller?
Yes.
Mr. Hollins? Ms. Kilpatrick?
Yes.
Mr. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Retta?
Yes.
Mr. Sheldon?
Yes.
Mr. Smiley?
Yes.
Mr. Tackett?
Yes.
Mr. Weiner?
Yes.
Mr. President, the roll call vote is 12 yes, 1 absent.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Ordinance 13-021. Mr. Tackett.
Thank you, PB. Madam yes. Clerk, could you please read the ordinance by title only and place before council for consideration and adoption? Second.
Ordinance 13-021, the amendment of the Penitentiary Chapter 22, offenses and miscellaneous provisions regarding disorderly conduct.
Mr. Tackett.
Thank you, PB. Hey, this is the last ordinance of the night. I hope we will give this as much time as we did the first ordinance.
I think we all have to go.
No. We discussed this thoroughly upstairs in committee meeting. This is brought to me by the police on an ordinance that I had originally sponsored, and it's just making a few changes and making our position when we do indeed need to go to court a little bit stronger.
Got 10. Comments or questions? Public comment? Seeing none, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Bullock?
Yes.
Mr. Cartier?
Yes.
Mr. Diller?
Yes.
Mr. Hahn? Mr. Kilpatrick?
Yes.
Mr. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Retta?
Yes.
Mr. Sheldon?
Yes.
Mr. Smiley?
Yes.
Mr. Street?
Yes.
Mr. Tackett?
Yes.
Mr. Weiner?
Yes.
Thank you. Item J, any honorary resolutions tonight?
Yeah.
Call on sponsor to move the resolution after the ordinance has been read into the record. Sponsor for explanation of comment, R13-106. Mr. Street.
Yes, Mr. President. I move the resolution number 13-106 be read by title only, placed before council for its consideration and adoption.
Second. Second.
Mr. Street. I'm sorry.
106, honoring the life of Mr. Samson Pops.
Per title, Mr. President.
Thank you. Questions and comments? Public comment? Seeing none, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Bullock?
Yes.
Mr. Cartier?
Yes.
Mr. Diller?
Yes.
Mr. Hollins? Mr. Kilpatrick?
Yes.
Mr. Power?
Yes.
Mr. Retta?
Yes.
Mr. Sheldon?
Yes.
Mr. Smiley?
Yes.
Yes.
Mr. Tackett?
Yes.
Yes.
Emergency ordinances, public comment or other?
Mr. Bullock?
Yes. Mr. Smiley?
Real quick before I do the... Before I do item M, I just would be remiss if we did not recognize Councilman Kilpatrick. Councilwoman Kilpatrick is now holding the record for the longest discussed resolution since November of 2004.
Which was mine also, right?
Thank you.
And Mr. President,
Ms. Street, Christina Boyd is truly grateful to her for holding this up.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Good night. Thank you.
Yep. Oh my God. What do you need here?